You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmargen, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Like, landed on the ground, I'm kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and we're talking moccasin and Joe. Well, the party they gon' have out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hey, good friend. I'm doing well as can be expected. How are you is the question.
I am doing great.
I'm glad to hear it. You know, Bill, I never get tired of hearing those tidbits or those teasers that you play now and then of our movies that we've done. And I'm sitting here reminiscing, you know, the Bob Hallmark piece. That was in Paris, Texas. It was 113 degrees that day. And those of you who have our movie or who have seen Bigfoot Lives, you could tell the sweat marks all over our clothing. And I'll never forget the chigger bites that
the
I
bugs.
Received, oh my God, in my body that night. But you know, here was a guy that had, he was skeptic. That guy was an ex-Navy SEAL, by the way. For those of you who don't know the story, he was a one-man battery, meaning he not only reports, tells the story, but he films it also, and he comes out into the woods and swamps, wherever he happened to be. And he's a one-man player. Well, when he left that night or early in the morning, I've got to tell you, he was totally bewildered because, like he says, and it was profound, what he said to everyone out there, was that he thought in today's times we would be able to find things like this if it existed. Well, he saw it with his own eyes, ladies and gentlemen. The guy hasn't been straight since, I don't think. He does not, you know, it gets you. You know, my son TJ made a statement a long time ago. Once you have an encounter, once you see these creatures, once it gets under your skin, it's with you until the day you die. And, you know, when I think about the thing up at Clarence, New York, by the guy's gator, you know, I heard that also. It made me feel like it was just there yesterday. And I also heard of Mike Sills in that same little clip, in that little ditty, where he said that was no human being, the thing that knocked him down. By the way, that Mike Sills is no longer with us, God rest his soul. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, when the countless mileage that we've gone throughout this United States, north, south, east, west, in between, to find our quest on this creature, the answer to this thing has been phenomenal. And you'll hear me say it in Bigfoot Lives. The thing that got me started was the Patterson film when I saw Roger Patterson in 1967 on the Johnny Carson show. You hear me tell it all the time. I was a skeptic then when I went out looking for this thing. But then I had personal encounters myself, me and the people that we had hooked up with. Well, you need to go up here to our website, ladies and gentlemen, Searching for Bigfoot. And it's so well put. I'm going to read it to you. And it says, very soon an event will transpire that will shake the very foundation of the Bigfoot world. This event will prove that a group of people were complicit in creating an iconic legend based on lies and deception. This group of people created an image that was perpetrated upon the public as a hoax for monetary benefit. We prove, we have witnesses, and we have testimonies. We have been deceived for years. We have been lied to for years, and soon we will reveal the hoax of the century. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, because everybody is going to be in shock when we reveal what we have. Without any further ado, let's see what we got on the schedule tonight. Boy,
here's what happened. We got Chuck dialed in, so he'll be on. Alex hasn't, and Kelly is our next guest.
Well, let's get out there to Kelly. Let's see what's going on out there.
Hi.
Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I'm a little weathered, Kelly. Where are you at? What state are you in?
I am calling from Colorado.
Yeah, and I understand that you, when you were a youngin', you had some experience with your mom and dad had an encounter out there in Kentucky, huh?
Yes, southeastern Kentucky. I didn't have the experiences, but they did. And to this day, in fact, as of 35 minutes ago, they're still holding tight to the story, and nothing's changed, so
well,
here I am
wonderful.
To tell you.
I like people like that. Now, what part of Kentucky is that, honey?
It's southeastern. It's a place called Paintsville, Kentucky. It's about an hour outside of Charleston, West Virginia. Such tiny towns around it, Prestonsburg, Zellersville. I don't know if any of those ring a bell.
They do. As a matter of fact, when you start using those burgs, they have all those burgs names out there when you're leaving Virginia. And we've been to probably all of those areas. Listen, Kelly, why don't you start your story? Tell us, you've got the stage, honey. It's yours. It's your night to shine. So tell
okay.
us everything that you know of what happened back there in those days in Kentucky with Mom and Dad.
Okay. This was back in about 1941. She's 73 now. And she was out at her old house out in what they call Mealy, Kentucky. It's in Johnson County somewhere up a holler. And she was playing outside with her younger brother in the front yard. It was about dusk. And they were sitting there in the front yard, and she said this thing came out of the woods. It didn't make a noise, and it standed on two legs, and it had two long arms. And she went to screaming and grabbed her brother, and she started taking off. But as she turned, she noticed it outstretched its arm and tried to swipe her, and she felt the whoosh of the air on the back of her dress. And so they got inside, and, of course, screaming and crying, the mother and father went out, and they couldn't find anything. So to this day, I still quiz her, like, what did it look like? Did it made? How do you know it didn't have a snout? Did it have a snout? Did it have a scent? Did it make any noise? And she said she knows what a bear looks like being in Kentucky, and to this day she says it wasn't a bear because it didn't have the nose, the snout. And she refers to it as having legs, not, you know, bear-looking. And that's, she says that's all she knows, is that she was said it wasn't a bear. And her brother, I'll ask him, and he says, being little, he doesn't know what it was, but he said also, he said it wasn't something that you would see. It wasn't a bear. So I always heard that story. And then speaking to my dad, and actually today, I found out that this happened in 1938 or 1939. So actually, it's not too far off from the 1941 story, and they were in the same town, but just different parts outskirts of the town. My dad was with his grandfather, who was a trapper and a coal miner back at that time. Also in southeastern Kentucky. And the way that they went and got their food was they did the trapping and they did the hunting, and they had about 6 or 7 hunting dogs that they would keep. And the dogs would love to go hunting. That's what they were bred for, and that's what they did. And he had set out a couple of bear traps and some other traps. And one day he went to get the dogs out to go hunting. And he had my dad with them. And he said that the dogs were scared, never seen them scared of anything, because they were used to hunting bear and all kinds of critters. But they would not come out from under that porch. And he couldn't get them out with food without going, you know, the call for hunting, nothing. So he couldn't get them out, so he just took my dad, and they went around and checked the traps. And my dad said that those traps were mangled all to heck. And his grandfather bent down, and he picked up long fur out of the traps that he's never, ever seen before. It was a reddish-brown long fur. And he's been a hunter and trapper all his life, and he said that it smelled so bad in that area. And he got spooked. And they took the traps, they went back to the house. Hunting dogs wouldn't come out for a day and a half. And my dad said that his grandfather kept saying how the area just smelled kind of skunky, had a weird smell to it. Well, like the second day, that afternoon, the smell kind of passed, and the hunting dogs came out. And to this day, he says he has no idea what it was. He's convinced it wasn't a bear, because they've trapped bears before, and the fur was nothing like they've ever seen before. So that's my second story.
Is there any more stories?
Just those. I thought I'd share. They've been in the family, and,
I got to tell you a story.
They're older, but...
Yeah, you know, think about this just for a second. You're going back many, many years, and, you know... People weren't cognizant of the fact of Bigfoot until Patterson's film in 67. You know that famous one that everybody
right.
sees all the time, the female? looking sideways and looking back at you with the swinging arms.
Right, in stride.
Think about in those 50s, in the 40s, in the 30s, people who did see these things and kept it to themselves. What do you think went through their mind, Kelly?
Probably back then it was some demon that got loose. And they probably were scared white, let's say.
Scared shitless, excuse the expression.
Yeah, I didn't know if I could say that on radio or not.
And that's why it's satellite radio. But I got to tell you this, you know, the majority of mainstream America, Kelly, doesn't realize that neck of the woods that you're talking about, that, you know, possum hunting and raccoon hunting and squirrel hunting, that was a way of life back then. Still
right.
is to a lot of the Appalachian areas today. People don't realize what it tastes like. But this was their main staple to eat, believe it or not.
Right.
People would go out and forage for their food so that their family would be fed. And that's the reason why they would run up against these critters, these creatures. And it's just amazing. Even today, in the times of today, 2012, folks, there's people still out in these rural areas, because a lot of people, Kelly, don't believe that there's still things out there like this today because it's 2012. I don't know if you knew this.
Thanks for the update.
But it's the truth, you know, and the thing that bothers me is the world underneath a rock somewhere? I don't know, okay? And you can't get down on them because they haven't been there. They haven't walked in our shoes. They don't know that there's parts of this world still right here in the United States of America, U.S. of A., that you can get out there and hide and nobody will ever find you. I don't care about any global positioning system that you might have, GPS or satellite system or anything else. It's called boots to the ground, folks, and that's the only way you're going to find it is getting out into this territory and under the canopy of darkness of these places that, you know, you didn't think existed but are still there. And there's a lot of unknown, even as of today. You know, Kelly, I want to thank you for sharing your story of your parents.
Yeah, and, sure.
We've got a whole lot more ahead of us tonight, so just mute yourself out and listen in, would you?
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Have a wonderful evening, dear.
All right, you too. Bye.
You know, Bill, I got to tell you, it's an amazing situation today's times. I don't think people really know what it's like out there. You know, they see these pokey stories that are on there now and these reenactments that are going on, and my God, folks, let me tell you something. We are not the people that are on TV, okay? We get, how many calls do we get a day, Bill? I mean, after a while between that and the
at least
email,
two or three calls a day, or about 10 or 15 calls a week.
Yeah, and then we're getting at least 3 to 5 emails a day. And, folks, we're not those guys. They keep saying to me, well, could you tell Boo-Boo a Bow-Bow? And I said to myself, who the hell is a Bow-Bow and a Boo-Boo? And it wasn't until, I guess, you told me it was the clown,
yeah.
Not the clown. Who's that guy on that show? What's he do?
He's one of the guys that believes in Bigfoot. The girl doesn't. He does. He's the guy that does all the calls. He's the big guy.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, forgive me now. I don't have the luxury of watching these fantasy shows. Okay, I'm out there creating them for these guys to go out and do and reenactments with. So, but I haven't had the opportunity to meet any of those people, okay? Not one of them. And that's okay, because I understand it's called entertainment for the people, for the general public, and some of you people are enjoying it. And I'm proud of them that they're, you know, they're at the forefront there doing whatever the hell they do, which I still don't know what that is. But that's okay. But please don't condemn me and my crew that I've got out here throughout the United States as them. We're just out there trying to find out the truth, as you are, guys. And I think the real truth of the matter is, Bill, I don't think John Q. Public
realizes in today's time of 2012 that, oh my God, there are real places out there where real things are happening, and you know what? You can get lost out there and never be found again.
Yes, there is.
So, JB was with us for many years, and he used to tell everybody, from Sacramento, California to Anchorage, Alaska, there had been like 72 fallen aircraft, unidentifiable, that they cannot find today with all of this high-class stuff of trying to find out where everything is. So it's an amazing, amazing thing. 2012, folks, we're not as strong and as know-how as you think we are, because you can still get out there and hide and nobody can find you. Look at this creature. It's been eluding us for a long time, hasn't it?
Sure has.
Now, where are we going next? Let's see. I understand.
Well, we're going to do a commercial.
Oh, let's do that. Let's pay some
here
bills.
We go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And Thomas, back to you.
Thanks, Bill. You know, ladies and gentlemen, that little tidbit is Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. I wish it would have gotten out a lot sooner than it did, but we were under contract and could not release anything. But I got to tell you something. You know, they say that film does not lie. It is of the minute and moment. And you're going to see some footage that tells it like it is. If you've not seen Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, get a copy. Take a look. After you see it, give me a call. Write me. Tell me what you think. My gosh, I know that you can get them on our website. I think it's the quickest way is getting it on our website, but if not, Amazon.com. You can download it on Gravitas, any of your cable companies, along with all the rest of our movies that we've got also. And I'm sure it's going to be on out there in all the retail markets real soon. But it tells an awful lot, explains behind the scenes what really happened, and answers a lot of your questions. Well, you know, I got a call here recently from a guy named Paul. We had talked a couple of years back. He was going and he was majoring in something there in college. We'll talk about that. And he's pretty astute. And he talks about the migrational paths and what have you. And we talked about this back then, and he pretty much singles things in on it now. Paul, you out there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Mr. Biscardi.
Good evening to you, sir. You're on the East Coast, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You know, I got to tell you a story. I was traveling when you had called me that day, and thank you. You kept me up because of, you know, we travel so many hours on the road, and, you know, we get white line fever. You know what that is?
Yeah, it's when you think there's a white line constantly.
Well, yeah, you get mesmerized by that white line in the darkness, and then all of a sudden, one of two things happens. You're either into a wreck off the bank, upside down in your vehicle, or you're crashing somewhere. So, and thank you for that. But I got to tell you something. I applaud you, and let me tell you the reason why. You had come up with an investigation that you had done on this migrational route and the times of the year, and which I capped on that. I do that all the time. But why don't you tell my audience around the globe exactly in a definitive form what you've come up with?
Okay. Well, a couple years ago, I was going to college for anthropology and forensics, And I've been studying Sasquatch since I was 5 years old, and my grandmother told me she saw one when she was a kid. And I live in an area of New York that's only about 120 miles from White Plains. And as we all know, White Plains is a pretty good hot spot here in the state. And I decided to start checking on some of the sightings and some of the counties across the New York area that had sightings. And I came across one county that White Plains is in that has an extremely large number of sightings. And as I started going west towards Ohio, I noticed that the sightings decreased, but then they'd increase when you got to the Ohio border. So I did some more investigating, and I started looking for reports of the same creature type, and I came across reports of a white creature that was seen in consequent counties across New York. And as I kept going and going, I started putting the months together and came up with a timeline and an area that I think they migrate to and from every year. So I decided to do an experiment at school one day. I got five of my friends, and I asked them, I'm going to jump in the woods behind the college. We have a nature trail behind the college that extends all the way across Auburn. I said, I'm going to try making it from the college to my house, but I want you guys to drive back and forth on 5 and 20 and in other areas and see if, you know, that the experiment's over if one of you guys catches me on my way home. Now, it's approximately 1.75 miles from my house to the college. So I beat feet. I headed for home. Well, about 2.5 hours later, I'm sitting drinking coffee in my living room, and my friends start calling me on the phone saying, dude, when can we stop? I said, well, you can stop anytime. I've been home for about an hour, man. So I noticed that it's very possible for a creature to move from place to place using one thing, and that's waterways. We have what we call the Black River here in Auburn that just happens to flow from Owasco Lake to the Seneca River. And after doing this experiment, I started getting back on the web and started making up graphs as to what time of year the sightings increased, decreased, and then increased again, and started noticing that right after winter ends, there's tons of sightings of these creatures in the lowlands coming down out of the Adirondacks and heading for their original areas. And then, lo and behold, between August and November, there's another increase in sightings. But guess what? This time it's in the opposite direction from opposite counties. So I now hold the belief that I know of a migration pattern and a migration path in upstate New York that I am very greatly interested in going out and seeing if I'm absolutely 100% correct.
So here's the point. Here's the question. Are we into that migrational period of time, in that time capsule for spring right now, yes or no?
In about 2 weeks, yes, we will be.
Okay. All right. So, and you believe that you've got that totally down pat?
Totally.
In an area of 120 miles, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And what did I tell you on the phone when we spoke?
If I sent you my data, you'd think about it.
Okay. I haven't received your data, so when you
That's send because I'm... This is a lot of data.
Okay.
It's...
I'm getting more convinced, okay, and all it is deja vu in my mind, but it's coming from someone else. You know, I heard something today, too, from a PhD, and it's sitting there and telling me, well, did you know, Mr. Biscardi, that there's a land bridge linking Siberia to the Yukon, and the mammoth elephant and the giant beaver and some other damn thing and humans cross that? I said, excuse me, sir. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you're just parroting what I said 40-some-odd years ago.
Oh, yes.
Are you a day late and a dollar short or what? You know, he's, oh, you did? I says, yeah, it's very apparent. You haven't done your due diligence and found out or read anything or seen any of my movies. and you'll find out that, my gosh, I was one of the beginners, the forerunners in this damn thing, telling everybody where I believe these things came from. But that's okay, too. I mean, what else are they going to write about, Paul? Think about it. Come on, man.
That's
very
true.
All they do is read other people's work or see other people's work on TV or on DVDs or in the movie. And for crying out loud, when you don't get in the field and you're an armchair quarterback, what do you expect for them to say, right?
Well, that's honestly true. Right now, Mr. Biscardi, I have in my possession an artifact that I'm actually sending up to, I'm sure you've heard of Cornell University.
Very well.
In my college studies and everything else, the reason I took geology, anthropology, forensics, and botany is because I wanted to look at the plant life that we have here in upstate New York and look and see exactly what a creature that weighed between 400 to 600 pounds could possibly be sustaining itself on. And I came to the conclusion that if bears can eat berry and nuts and they survive very well, then there's absolutely no reason that Sasquatch or I call them Sanaquis. It's a hard word to pronounce, but the Indians in British Columbia, known as Kowakals, that's what they called it. But I came to the conclusion that there's absolutely no reason here in the state of New York. Walter Eichmann was my professor, and he helped me draw up another bar graph. And the reason the migration here won't start until April is because certain plants don't start growing until April. And then in August, you have other plants that are in full bloom, such as the fruits. And I believe that all these are eaten on their migrations. I believe that here in a couple weeks in New York, the trout run starts. Another ample, a very ample food supply. Many small creeks, many small rivers. But the artifact that I'm discussing at the moment, I found in the Black River last year, and I'm sending it off sometime this week, but it's in the shape of a pelvic bone, an extremely large, thick pelvic bone that is fossilized. And if it turns out to be a pelvic bone, I will have made a very, very distinguished discovery. I'm hoping it's a pelvic bone. But the thing with me, Mr. Biscardi, is my grandmother told me when I was 5 years old that she lived in Chemung County here in New York, which is down towards Binghamton. And she was walking home excuse me?
Go ahead. You got the stage. Go ahead. Talk.
Oh, sorry. I heard a ding. My grandmother was walking home with her sisters one day, and they started getting this real bad whiff of smell. And then they heard something following them alongside the trail off to her right. She said she never did see it, but it sure smelled, and it sure walked on two legs. And she said, you know, we've got bear around here, and bear don't walk that far on their hind legs. I've seen bear walk on their hind legs. And I've always wanted to know what that thing was that followed us. It wasn't no man. It was way too heavy sounding. Like I said, she never saw it, but she could hear the footsteps. Way too heavy sounding to be a man. And about 5 years old, I went down to the local library, and I'm sure you've read the book. It's called Bigfoot by Rene DeHinden and John Green. And I read that book front to back, back to front, and was amazed with several of the stories in it, such as Albert Ostman, Mike Zigerman, Johnny Hawkins, all these names. And I decided at a very young age that I was going to do something to prove these things exist. My problem is, I know man, and when we find one, unfortunately for it, it'll become a sideshow at some circus. But the biggest thing for me, Mr. Biscardi, is I really want a chance to prove to people, first of all, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy for believing in these things. And for second, I've got theories and ideas that I want to put to test that I don't believe anyone else has tried. I've watched this finding Bigfoot for the last 2 years, and in all honesty, the biologist they have, Renee, I call her a quack now. I don't even refer to her as a biologist. She says that her reason for doubting some of the stories is because people are making a lot of noise, and if I'm a creature walking through the woods, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to stay away from that noise. Well, that's not entirely true. So, I mean, the calls, that can, that's neither here, there, neither here nor there for me. But some of the things I want to try is I want to try a long-term camp out, carrying on day-to-day life at camp with cameras up in well-known areas. I want to go to these areas that I think the migration happens. And another thing people do is they walk on the paths, the footpaths that humans walk on. And in every report I've ever read, the things off to the left, the things off to the right, it's following us. It's paralleling us in the woods. I got one question for most people, especially the people on Finding Bigfoot, is they never send anyone off the path to the left or off the path to the right. They always walk down the path.
Do you know why that is, Paul?
They're scared.
Well, I'm sure that has something to do with it. But when you're doing reenactments, Paul, what do you expect? You know, you hit it right. You hit the nail right on the head. I mean, but remember one thing. I mean, you can't condemn these people. They're there for a reason, okay? They're getting some kind of ratings. It's called entertainment. And each week, people are tuning in for one reason. You know what that ultimate reason is, Paul?
Yeah, boredom.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you because it's called the entertainment factor. And yeah, you're right, too. A lot of people have a lot of time on their hands. They got nothing better to see on TV. They're all anticipating seeing that creature. That's the bottom line here. That's why they tune in each and every week. Let's be real about this whole thing.
Well, do you watch
I'm not
going to
knock the show. I've seen about, I think it was about 5 minutes, and then somebody came in and woke me up and says, "Hey, man, aren't you going to watch this?" I says, "Well, I tried to, but I guess I'm just too tired, and I fell asleep." Get the picture, Paul?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, see, what disturbs me about this show the most is last week they actually had a what I would call a somewhat very interesting video that some kid took when he was out building a fire and setting off some gasoline bombs. And in it, it showed what I consider to be one of the best videos they've actually had on there of something about 100 and, I'd say probably about 100, 125 feet away, laying behind a bunch of logs, and all of a sudden the bomb goes up and the thing stood up and started walking away from the fire. And I watched that, and I actually copied it onto my computer and started doing a loop around just like I did with the Patty film from 1967. And to me, it was one of the best non-planned videos that I've seen so far besides Patty. It's not very good in quality of video, but when the thing stands up and walks away, it's not walking like a human. It's not dressed like a human. And they sat there and ripped the guy apart that had the video, instead of actually investigating. The one thing that I've never seen them do, and it really disturbs me to this day, is when they go to a sighting spot, like they were at a sighting spot last week, and there's a bunch of thistles and a bunch of nettles. Now, what happens to humans or to an animal when they walk through thistles? There's only one thing that happens that I know of, because I've done it many, many times.
They're jumping up and down. Get me out of here.
Overtime, yeah. Tom, overtime.
Yeah, I know, Bill. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, here's my question. You just made a definitive statement about the Patty film, because I guess you're in the corner of all the believers in the world, and I don't knock you for that. But when you look at that Patty film, do you see a female or do you see a male in that thing?
In all actuality, I see an older male. I don't see a female. I see an older male.
Good. Now you're getting smart, okay? Where'd the pendulous breasts come from, son?
Well, what happens to the men when they get a little older and put on some weight?
Yeah, but this is different now. They're in a territory that they build muscles. You know, that's all muscles up in the area of everything else. Everybody, all of our astute
PhDs and scientists have come forth and said, oh, no, this is definitely a female because of the pendulous breasts. I look at that thing, and I looked over it many, many times over the course of 40 years. And I keep saying to myself, damn, it looks like a man, okay? And you said it yourself. We've never talked about this, have we?
No.
Okay? It looks like a man, okay? It walks like a man, okay? Remember the old adage, okay? If it walks and talks like a duck, it is a duck.
Correct.
So what I'm telling you is, and I'm just giving you a little tidbit, okay? So see if you how astute you get, and I'm going to see if you're going to take this ball and run with it. You're on the 50-yard line, Paul, because then we're going to have to go. I'm going to see if you go for a TD or back yardage. If it looks like a man, it is a man. Is it a man in a costume, or is it the real thing? I got to go. God bless you. Thanks for sharing your story with us. And I will be with you in 2 weeks. Have a good time.
You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Paul. He's very astute. I love when somebody gets into what they're doing. And yes, Mr. Bill, I know we're into overtime. Okay, let's get out and see my buddy from PA, Dr. Joe. Joe, you out there?
Yes, I am.
Boy, you sound chipper this evening, young man.
Well, great. You do, too.
I'll tell you what. If you saw me, you wouldn't think so. I'm torn and worn and tired. I need some of those adjustments. Maybe I'll come up and see you. I ain't too far.
That would wake you up.
I'm sure you will. Well, Dr. Joe, tell me what's going on about these recent photos that you took and all this action going around your office.
Well, we saw what's called a lean-to, which is kind of a teepee-like looking thing. And you kind of walk up to it, and your first impression is, oh, somebody made that. And we walked up to it, took some photos, and the kid I was with, he said, look, there's corn cobs eaten inside the teepee. And I thought that was really a telltale sign that it couldn't have been made by somebody. I mean, there hasn't been any corn since Rex was up there. So where did the corn come from? So had another buddy was looking around the teepee structure, and he said, did you see this tree over here? And I said, no. And when you look at the tree that it's built upon, it almost looks smashed in, which tells me that they were tree knocking on it. You can almost see, like, you know, it looks like a baseball bat hit the tree a few times. And there's also a claw mark on the tree. I didn't send those pictures. They didn't come out that good, but boy, that was just, you know, when we saw the claw mark and the smashed bark, it was like, well, you know, somebody didn't obviously think of putting corn in there and smashing the tree and scratching it. So that was pretty neat. But on Sunday, I had scheduled a little team to get together to have about 10, 15 people come out. Check out everything. Everybody have video cameras and everything. And actually, this was last Sunday, and everybody blew me off. I was the only one that showed up. I'm like, you know, you got to be kidding me. So I scheduled everybody. It snowed that day, so I could see maybe why no one showed up. So it was supposed to be about 70 this past Sunday, and told everybody to come again. Of course, nobody shows up again. One kid does show up, and we went out. Did some scouting, found some poop, some new tree breaks, and I took him up in my tree stand where I always see the creature, and it's there, and he sees it. And he's like, oh, my goodness. He's like, I see a shoulder and a head. What is that? I'm like, that's it. You're seeing it. He's just blown away. So now I got a credible witness that can back me up. So yesterday, I take out two separate patients, and they both saw it too. The first one was just blown away. Wow, I can't believe it. I can see it. He walked down to where it was, and I was looking at it in the binoculars. I kept a steady eye on it. It didn't budge. He got about, say, 30 yards away, and it still was there. He turned around. Like, I don't see anything. I'm coming back, and I'm in my tree stand waving them, hold on. So I got down and I walked over to where he was, and it's gone. So he was just amazed. And the second patient, about an hour later, came out, and he doesn't believe at all. He says, my brother believes, but I don't believe at all. So I get him up in the tree stand. He's probably about three quarters of the way up, and he's like, I'm just gonna go back down and look. I'm like, come on, you're only three more steps. I think he was afraid of heights. I said, come on, you're only three more feet up. Come on. Oh, my knees. I don't think I'm like, come on, I'm looking at it. It's up here. Get up here. So I finally convinced him to get up. He gets up in there, and he's looking, and I'm like, it's just to the right of that white tree and just to the left of the black tree. He's looking. He says, is it that brown fuzzy thing in the middle? I'm like, were you kidding me? I mean, what brown fuzzy thing could possibly be in the middle of these two trees? Yes, that's it. So he sees it too, and we have both walked down there, and he's very analytical. He's looking back at my tree stand. He's trying to figure out the exact angle of where we were sitting compared to where we were looking. And he's like, now if you move over 2 feet to the left here and you look down, you can kind of see something right there. Are you sure that's not what you're looking at? And he kind of had me stumped for a second, and we looked at some more tree breaks, and we went home, and I thought about it all night, and I texted him, and I said, now, if you think about where we were in my tree stand, and that object was to the immediate left of the white tree and to the immediate right of the black tree, it was in between those two trees, and when you and I walked down there, there was nothing in between those two trees, so it couldn't have been the angle that you suggested, right? And he texted me back, and he said, you know what, I totally agree with you, and that is strange. I have no explanation. So he saw it too. There was three people in the last few days that have seen it.
Wow, that's great, Joe. Well, listen, I'm coming up to New York there, and I might as well just stop in to see you too.
Yeah, you definitely need to come down.
I
hung a jar of honey up in the trees. I tied it up there about 10 feet up. They haven't touched that in about a week and a half. But what I noticed was they took like a baseball bat size branch and broke both ends off and laid that down underneath the honey. And that same baseball bat size limb with broken off both ends was placed near my tree stand.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, you keep us informed of what's going on. Thanks for sharing with us tonight. We've got a whole lot more of a show. Mute yourself out.
Thanks, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bill, let's go to commercial real quick.
Here we go.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I got to tell you, that's the day I thought I was going to challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmargen, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Lundgren. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, I kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
Thank you.
Bigfoot Lives, a movie at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And Thomas, back to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the movie that started it all for me and my boys. Bigfoot Lives. Tells it all right there. And by the way, that was our first award-winning documentary. And we haven't stopped because Bigfoot Lives 2 won, Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax 1. Haven't submitted anything else, but this year we're going to have a blockbuster. It brings great pride to my heart. We've got somebody coming on the show now up there in Four Corners, New Mexico. Dave Ortiz is like one of my own. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thank you.
How are things up there in Four Corners, Farmington?
Oh, well, first of all, the weather has just really improved dramatically. It's just great to be outside, and this gives us a chance to go out and be in the field more now.
You know, I've got to tell you something. I meant to tell this to Paul earlier. I told everybody this since last October about this craziness with this weather change. It just hasn't been right. You know, all of a sudden, you know, people are calling me up in the last month. They're getting abnormally hot weather.
Yeah.
You know, and here it is supposed to be still winter a month ago in February.
Right.
And now I'm getting calls today that, hey, by the way, Tom, do you know we just had snowfalls. We're getting torrential rains. And I'm telling you, Dave, something's not right up there.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tom. It's last week, a little over a week ago, we had 6 to 7 inches of snow here, and now it's like 70 degrees now.
I know. And here's the problem. If we're having a problem getting our arms around the weather situation, what's happening with these creatures?
It's hard to tell, but I would think that their patterns would be very disrupted.
Big time.
Yeah.
Exactly. So tell me what's going on up there.
Okay, well, we've had some, past several weeks, we've had not so much sightings, but we've had evidence, you know, footprints, tree, you know, the tree breaks. And here a few weeks ago, I went on an investigation with Brenda that lives, you know, down in the valley here, the River Valley. We went to visit some people who had reported things going on in their back property. In that back property, we did find some footprints that approached the house. They were a little bit older, but as we went along in our investigation, right by the river, passes through here, one of several, we found footprints, very fresh footprints, like it possibly maybe the night before, and then we found a baby footprint, about 6 to 7 inches long. It was amazing, and while we were looking in the in the next property, it was somebody else's property, but it was just right, very close adjacent. We found brand new trails that were being made through the Russian olive and the tamarisk, and then we caught a big whiff of skunk odor, skunky garbage odor, and it quickly drifted away. So we concluded that whatever was around there had been actually watching us. And then as we got closer, it silently went into the river and got away from us. So we found there's a car in the back property. It's a 57 Chevy four-door, a gold one, and I know the person. Let's see, I know the person whose sister owns that property, and that person is named Fred. He's a drummer in one of my bands. He told me that 57 Chevy had been there for years. They used it for river erosion control, and just set it on the side of the river on a steep bank. Well, it had been covered with dirt, approximately 6 to 8 inches of a layer of dirt, and then the tamarisk was growing on top of it. Apparently, something broke out the window, and it was being used as a habitat inside of it. It still is, probably. And then there's a really steep but wide trail that goes directly to the river, almost like an escape route, in case maybe if somebody starts walking back to the back property, they just jump into that trail and slide down into the water, and you know, nobody detects them. We also heard a couple of loud whistles across the river too. And I heard another story, actually, from Brenda, that the contactee, that it must have been about a week and a half ago, very close to a rural neighborhood on the public side of the river. There's the public land side, which is the north of the river, and the Navajo Reservation on the south side. Two men were, they were just going out shooting, just hitting targets of all sorts. As they were walking home, they decided they were going to go sleep in a trailer. It was getting dark real fast, and they didn't want to walk. It was approximately a mile, mile and a half. They didn't want to walk in the darkness, so they were going to stay in a camp trailer within the property. But something was following them and crashing through all that brush. It was actually very close where we did our investigation, remember, with the TV crew?
Right.
Yeah, and they ran to the camper, apparently, and something did follow them and even tried to pry the door. Didn't open the door, but it was very large and huge. There's just reports like that are just coming around almost.
You know, it's amazing that you said that. I'm going to get our good friend Chuck Creel on the phone. You remember Chuck, don't you?
Yeah, sure do.
Yeah. He's got an exciting story. He got me out of an important meeting the other day, and I took the time. Chuck, you out there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you, son?
I'm doing okay, young man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Chuck. Listen, guess who we got on the phone with us? Dave Ortiz. Remember Dave?
Hello,
Chuck.
Everything's going okay, bud. How about yourself?
Well, do you remember Dave Ortiz? He's with us right now. Dave Ortiz is on the line with us right now.
Oh, Dave Ortiz is?
Yeah, he is. Do you remember him when we were all together in Texas?
He's good people.
He sure as hell is. He was just talking about that they took refuge, these guys that were shooting, in a trailer where one of these creatures were coming out of a brush. Why don't you tell all of our listeners out there what happened to you just the other night?
Okay. All right. Just tell me what I need to tell them.
You just tell them what you told us.
Well, I don't know how to do all that stuff.
You just open your mouth and tell the story what happened to you there in Alabama, in Chancellor.
Right. Okay. I don't know what you would call him. He's a big, huge dog, you know? And he didn't do nothing. I couldn't find him. I couldn't find Rezzy, my other dog, that Chief Leonard Dan named. I couldn't find him either.
Tell my listeners what happened to you in your home. What was the knocking?
I couldn't find none of them. You know? So, I didn't think nothing of it at the time. You know, I didn't think nothing of it at the time.
What actually happened? You haven't told my listeners what happened.
I honestly think I had a Bigfoot come around here.
And what did they do? What did they do on the side of your house?
Well, I can't hardly hear you.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you the story real quick because we're beating against the time here. He had some creature or something knock against his house and pound on it. And the siding on the house has been dented. He went out twice with his gun.
I'd have a guy come out here and replace the siding today.
Well, I'm glad you're... Well, it's like pulling teeth from you, son. Either that or I don't know what the hell's gone wrong with you. But that's okay.
No, he had to... It actually cost me like $300 and some.
Well, did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? He had somebody come out and replace the siding on whatever this thing was. Think about this, Dave. Something came, just we've heard this so many times, came and knocked on their trailers, and they did that same thing Chuck's house.
I'm not saying it's Bigfoot. You know? I'll be the first person to say that's not that. But that's like Kelly said, what the hell else is going to come around here like that?
Yeah. All right, Dave, we'll talk soon. Chuck, thanks so much for helping us. Miss Calabash, I hope you're sleeping well tonight. Good night, Bill.
I can barely hear you, Tom.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Green men with a gold and a pack that they hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts. Put them all together.